This program contains explicit content and subject matter which may be unsuitable for some listeners. Discretion is advised.
Sex Out Loud is sponsored by Lilo, award-winning designers of the world's best pleasure objects.
Smart. Sexy. Kinky. Fun.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud with your host, sex educator, author, and filmmaker, Tristan Taramino. It's sex-positive radio like you've never heard before. Tristan talks about sexuality from every angle with leading authors, experts, artists, and icons. From sex education and sexual politics to BDSM and non-monogamy, nothing is off limits. So get ready to open your mind and expand your horizons. This is Sex Out Loud. And now here's your host, Tristan Taramino.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud. I've got a special treat for you today. You all know that I loved the event I went to, Sex Down South, and I recorded a special interview there in person, and you're going to hear that in just a minute. But I wanted to first say a super giant thank you to my brand new sponsor, The Pleasure Chest. The Pleasure Chest has been in my life for, well, quite a long time. The first one I visited was in New York City when I was probably 19 years old. And I'm so excited to have them on board. They are so supportive. They have such a good sex education message. And it's really a perfect fit. So thank you, Pleasure Chest. And now, here's the show.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud. I am recording this episode at Sex Down South, the first conference of its kind in Atlanta, Georgia. And to find out about their next event, go to sexdownsouth.com. My guest today is both one of the organizers of the event on the team and also is presenting this weekend. Andre Schachty is a Bay Area educator, producer, activist, and professional slut. Devoted to normalizing alternative desires, destigmatizing sex workers and their partners, and not taking herself too seriously. She writes about sex work for Cosmopolitan online and is currently working on an anthology of sex advice anecdotes by sex workers for 3L Media. She recently had an essay published in the brand new anthology, Coming Out Like a Porn Star, edited by Jiz Lee. Welcome to Sex Out Loud, Andre.
Thank you for having me.
Let's begin with professional slut, shall we?
Awesome. Okay. Let's dive right in.
Yes. Let's start there.
So just as my self-identification as professional slut?
Yeah.
Well, I feel like if you get paid to do something, then that makes you professional, right? And I have my own kind of, I don't even know where this idea came from, but I have my own idea about how much time you have to invest in an industry or in a hobby or in a passion or in whatever in order to be a professional. And somewhere along like my education spectrum, that became 5 years. So if I've been doing something for 5 years, I will like accept teaching gigs on it. I will accept money to do that thing. If it's less than 5 years, I'll like resource referral out. So I've definitely been doing sex work for 5 years. In fact, it'll be a decade in February. I know. And I was precocious. I started young. So yes, I feel very comfortable in the professional slut arena.
And what kinds of sex work do you do, or do you want to tell me about doing?
Oh, I'm totally out. I started off as a stripper, and I used to do like a lot of erotic dancing and burlesque, and then I kind of refer to it as the sexual snowball effect. It's like the longer you've been in the industry, the more people that you meet, the more opportunities you get, and as you kind of roll downhill, you just pick up more facets of the industry along the way. And so at this point in my life, the majority of the work that I do is pornography and professional domination and fetish wrestling, which basically means that I wrestle hot girls for money. It's kind of the best job ever.
Okay, and so is this, when you wrestle these girls, where can we go see this? Is it on Kink?
I started out doing it via Ultimate Surrender, kink.com. Yeah. I actually was doing these like catfighting videos back in D.C. for a while, which are really sketchy. They like pick girls off of Craigslist and then like you show up and you have to like pretend like you hate each other, but since you don't know each other and they're paying the winners more money, in all, you know, reality, they actually do kind of hate you. And so you're setting yourself up for this, like, really dangerous girl fight situation, which, of course, is, like, the heart of that fetish, right?
Do you have sex at the end or in the middle?
With catfighting, no.
You keep your clothes on.
It's just two girls going at each other with no rules. So that's how I got into it. And then I, like, sustained an injury, and I was like, well, maybe that's not a good idea. And then somebody was like, you know, you should do porn. Kink.com has this wrestling site called Ultimate Surrender. And I actually popped my porn cherry with Dylan Ryan on Ultimate Surrender 4 years ago.
Dylan Ryan, who I love tremendously and worked with. Okay, so, and because I didn't know if that had expanded. To me, I always think of Kink.com, but I was like, is there another sort of erotic wrestling, you know, world out there?
Mm-hmm. There's a site that I also do a lot of work for. It's called Academy Wrestling, and they are based in San Jose, California, and they will shoot a lot of very similar to Ultimate Surrender, but not as more technique focused and less less sex focused. There's still a sex element to it, but the girls are generally those who have been actually training in arts like Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, or grew up wrestling, you know, standard wrestling on you know, American teams and whatnot. They tend to have more of an athletic background than the porn stars that, you know, come from a sex workplace first and foremost.
And have to sort of learn the moves.
Exactly. They get thrown on Ultimate Surrender. So those are kind of the two, like, big vying companies right now in the
And you also do some queer porn.
I do.
I may have seen you a time or two.
Yeah,
in some queer porn.
Twice.
And the queer porn scene really is sort of centered around San Francisco. But have you done other things besides those sort of San Francisco companies that all of us think of, like Pink and White and Trouble and and also T-Wood and
Well, the porn community in general is generally centered in California, except for some companies in Florida, some companies in New York City that tend to be, like, gay male-centric. So one of the reasons that my ex and I actually moved out to California in the first place was they wanted a place where they saw more trans people of color, and I wanted a place where I could shoot more porn because I figured out that I really liked it, and I was flying out to San Francisco, like, once a month, and it was getting a little tedious. But the companies that I predominantly shoot for, Kink.com, because even though they are a large corporation, they're the largest BDSM, you know, porn site in the world, I do think that they have really good ethics and really good politics, and I've always been treated really well by them. So they would be maybe one of the most mainstream companies that I shoot for. I also recently did some projects for Adam and Eve. Paul Deeb and Andrew Sullivan were directing they directed their big feature, which was Marriage 2.0 last year, and they did some follow-up erotic sitcom style pilot episodes that they recently pitched to Adam and Eve to hopefully carry on with consistent sitcom episodes of these erotic sitcoms, which is kind of like a new idea in the industry that they're trying to pioneer. And I do know that the first two episodes of two different sitcoms, one called Gonzo Girl, about a girl who starts her own gonzo porn company, and the other one called Couch Surfing, both are going to be video on demand on Adam and Eve.
Oh, good.
So those are, like, another... I don't work with Adam and Eve a lot, but I really, really love those directors, and I think they did a great job.
Yeah.
And then some stuff for Philly Films.
Oh, yeah, Philly. Yeah. Philly Films. Yeah. I saw you in Marriage 2.0.
Yes.
We had Magnus Sullivan on the show to talk about it, and I loved you. I fucking loved you in Marriage 2.0.
I just played a caricature of myself is really what I did in Marriage. A slightly straighter caricature of myself.
Right, okay, right. Well, the thing is, the acting is sort of across the board really good. Mm-hmm. It's stronger than your average adult production. And when you were making that film, when you first read the script, like, did you feel like, okay, this is something really different?
I did. I feel like what they're doing is what Magnus and Paul are doing, or what they were doing with Marriage 2.0, is they're trying to bridge a gap between two genres. Right, they're trying to bridge a gap between, you know, I think of, like, the sexy Lifetime movie. That's, like, what I, like, think in my mind as being a whole genre, right?
Right.
They're trying to connect with folks that are outside the demographics that most porn companies are marketing towards. They're trying to market towards women. They are trying to market towards queer people. They are working for Adam and Eve, held within, you know, certain constraints that prevent them from doing that, from being... queerer than maybe Marriage 2.0 turned out. But I do think they're trying to add a narrative to porn that isn't normally there. They are trying to add production quality, both in terms of behind the scenes and also the quality of the actors in terms of performance, like believability, actors mm-hmm. that can carry roles and not just sex scenes, which actually kind of reminds me of how porn was shot back in, like, the
in
70s
the
and 80s,
yeah.
right? Where, like, I was actually reading, Candida Royale's essay in Coming Out Like a Porn Star recently, and she was talking about how porn performers actually had to go audition for roles, which is completely different than how the industry is set up.
No,
these things,
and
right?
Candida, who we lost very recently,
yeah.
But she'll tell you that one of the reasons she was a success as a performer was that she could act, mm-hmm. and because she came from this theater cabaret background.
Mm-hmm.
And that was actually valued in a much different way than what we've got going on now.
Absolutely. And it's not to say, honestly, that it's better or worse. I mean,
no.
In my opinion, porn performers are not less than they were because they no longer have to audition for roles. You know,
right.
I mean, I attribute it both to, like, the culture of having an agent, like the idea of having agents and agents making decisions for performers in a lot of cases that sometimes leave the performer, you know, out of that decision-making process, but also just the proliferation of porn and how much of it is being produced and how much less effort it takes to produce something without having to go through an audition process, right? And,
right.
You know, and the fact that people in reality are going to wank off to anything, you know? So it's really, that's really what it is.
Okay, so when you did these erotic sitcoms,
mm-hmm.
what was that like? Because to me, the sitcom, it looks easier than it is, right? So it looks effortless when you watch it.
Mm-hmm.
But to be funny is not that easy.
Yeah.
So you have to be funny and you have to fuck.
Exactly. Yeah. And if you can't really ride that line, because you can't really be funny while you're fucking, because then, like, that's not really great jerk-off, Mitchie. You may be having a great time,
right.
but the person watching isn't going to be like, oh my God, they told such a good joke.
Right.
I'm, like, pantomiming a jerk-off motion
yeah,
right now.
Yeah, you can't see her, but...
No. It was one of the hardest things I've ever done. The great thing about Paul and Magnus when we were shooting these pilot episodes, they already think I'm funny. I don't think I'm funny. I don't think I'm a naturally funny person. I also don't think that I have a lot of range as an actress. But they saw who I was as a person and they created characters for me that were really, as I mentioned before, like caricatures of who I already am. And so I felt really comfortable on set. I felt like I wasn't being asked to go way outside my comfort zone. Because also, if you ask a performer to go way outside their comfort zone in one moment, and in the next moment you're asking them to be super vulnerable and have a scene with lots of physical intimacy and nudity on camera, those things don't often work well together. So
yeah,
they created a really comfortable set where they knew their performer's strengths and they capitalized on them and they wrote them into the characters for them. And there was a lot of improvisation on set and a lot of just trying different things that worked. And yeah, I actually just saw both pieces screened and I'm really excited about them.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
And people can get them, so that's good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're going to take a break, but we have a lot more to talk about, including sex work, fisting, non-monogamy, sex down south, and your activities last night. I'm just going to tease it. I'm not going to tell you what it is. So stay with us. More with Andre Shakti on Sex Out Loud when we return. Hey, everyone. It's Tristan. Listen, there is nothing sexier than experience. Just ask the Pleasure Chest. As the oldest sex-positive boutique in America, this legendary establishment has made it their mission to provide sexual fulfillment to everyone, regardless of orientation, identity, or experience. With stores in New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago, as well as online, the Pleasure Chest wants to help you have the best sex of your life. Whether you're buying your first vibrator or your 10th leather flogger, you'll be assisted by a knowledgeable and friendly staff in an elegant, sex-positive environment. If you're looking to expand your sexual expertise, they offer free weekly workshops in locations nationwide where no subject is taboo or off-limits. Visit PleasureChest.com to learn more, because sex never goes out of style. You can use the coupon code Tristan at checkout and enjoy a free Pleasure Chest lube with every purchase.
Pleasure and the freedom of sexual expression are universal human rights, and the better they're understood, the better they're enjoyed. For over a decade, Lilo has been designing pleasure objects that allow their owners to explore their bodies and better understand exactly what makes them feel good. Lilo knows that when you explore your sensations alone, the better equipped you are to start living a healthy, more vibrant, more satisfying life in every other respect. The right Lilo product, and there are many, for every purpose and solo sensation, can help you discover what feels right over and over again. Visit Lilo.com or any good adult store today to learn more, because sometimes the greatest gift you can get is the one you give yourself.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. My guest today is Andre Shakti, and we are recording at Sex Down South, which is the first conference of its kind in Atlanta, Georgia. We've been having a blast. And last night I had the opportunity, but I didn't get to go. Andre was super dressed up and with Johnny Blazes, who's a performer, and they were headed out to a strip club. I now need all the details.
Oh, good God. Well, I like to tell people when they come visit me in California that I am the worst tour guide for your family, but the best tour guide for you as an individual. I know no family destinations in any major cities. I'm very well traveled. I have no idea where the best restaurant is. I have no idea where the best like historical monument is to go for like a lovely hike and picnic. But I do know the best strip clubs to go to in every city. And if I fly to a new city and I don't know this information, I have to immediately seek it out. So,
okay, so with Atlanta, did you know about this place?
No, this is my first time. This is my first time in Atlanta, and, I came with Johnny and we're rooming together, and we're both on the exact same traveler page. We are like each other's traveling companions for life. So, Travelocity was suggesting we go to the zoo. We said, fuck Travelocity, and we're going to find some strip clubs. So we got really good Southern food at a Busy Bee Cafe 2 days ago, and we asked all the wait staff where they think, all the female wait staff, where we should go. And all of them said unanimously and with lots of enthusiasm, we should go to a club called Magic City.
Magic City.
Yes.
Okay.
And we also heard really good things about a more dive bar, like eclectic type club called the Claremont. And so we did both last night. We hit both back.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Yeah.
So tell me about it. I also, it's my first time in Atlanta, so I don't even know what to expect, like, when I go to an Atlanta
tonight?
Strip club.
Are you looking right now afterwards?
I mean, I'm looking right now, because I have
so open at 1 o'clock.
So much free time. They do. The free buffet. Okay. So what was it like?
It was amazing. It was, I like to say I grew up in strip clubs, but that sounds like potentially problematic. I did not grow up in strip clubs. I just worked in them from when I was like 18 to 24. And so I have an immense love for strip clubs. And in fact, strip club culture shaped a lot of who I am today as both like a sexual person, like a sex educator. And so they're just my comfort zone. Magic City, very relaxed environment, very, very busy. Lots of women working at the same time. Lots of women, you know, busy hustling. Lots of men trying really hard to look incredibly disinterested while women sat completely nude grinding on their laps. Women being completely undeterred by their disinterest and happily taking their money. Women on stage alternating between playing on their iPod tablets and then like with a completely blank face just jumping into like a one-armed handstand and doing like three splits and then going back to being on their iPod tablets. I mean, it was just one of the things I loved about it was how it was organized, how much organized chaos it seemed to be. And whether this happens to be true or not, because I don't know anything about the management at Magic City, but the women really did look like they were all just kind of running the show, like hopping on stage when they wanted to. The DJ would make fun of them over the microphone for being on their tablets, and they would just ignore the voice coming from the ceiling. You know, it was just really this, like, very sexy, organized chaos.
Mm.
Yeah.
And did you get some lap dances?
Of course we did.
I mean, is it weird, though, as a stripper to go to a strip club? Because it's like when I go out to dinner with chefs, for example, they're like micromanaging the whole thing, and they're thinking about all these things, and it's like, I don't want to know what's going on in the back of the kitchen. I just want you to come out and present this amazing food to me.
Are you thinking about that? Yes. Yeah. So I think Johnny had the best quote of the night, which is that they bought us a lap dance from this beautiful woman that we were both eye fucking across the room, and she came over and is giving me a lap dance, and afterwards Johnny leans over and says, you know, I love looking at your face when you're receiving lap dances because it's this perfect mixture of arousal and professional approval. that's the mask that I have on the whole time I'm there, because it's never judging. It's never, you know, I never go into a strip club and I'm like, those women were not acrobatic enough, or they did not fit my physical ideals, so they are below me. You know, I just go in with such a love of the sex work industry and such a love of the people who work in that industry and such a boner for femme women that just overshadows any kind of critical thinking that my brain could get into.
But there's professional approval.
Oh, yeah.
There's professional approval.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so where you're not hanging out at strip clubs, you taught fisting at this conference.
I did.
Okay, tell me how that went. Tell me how the class went, and did you do a live demo?
Oh, my gosh. So my immediate response is going to be like, well, I didn't get to do a live demo, so it didn't go as well as I had hoped. Though I think I would have had volunteers. I may be, like, you know, patting my own back, but I think there would have been people that volunteered in that class. It was wonderful. It is one of my favorite things to talk about. It's one of my favorite things to do. It's one of my favorite things to teach people about. And it seemed like I had this great full room that was a mixture of folks for whom this was a completely new idea and new experience and new concept, and who were furiously taking notes, and their eyes were, you know, just deer in headlights, and then folks who were just, you know, snapping with every third word I said, because they knew how wonderful it was and how great it was. And I don't even know what else to say about fisting, except, like, everyone should
I'm going to make you say more. Fisting played a role in my opening keynote, as you know.
Yes.
Fisting showed up, let's just say. But what do you love about fisting? Why do you love fisting so much? Because I think people who have never heard of it or who don't do it immediately assume, like, wow, that seems like too much, that seems violent, that seems like you're punching me, what's going on?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a joke that I'm sure you've heard that's why your dominatrixes always lose in a fist fight, and it's because they fight with the duckbill fist instead of punching fists, right?
So imagine the duckbill is when you take your hand, you squish your fingers all together. That's a duckbill.
Yes.
Just do that with your hand right now, and you can picture what it is.
Yes. And so that's an appropriate fisting fist. That's what I refer to as the nonviolent fist, right?
Right.
So we fist with the nonviolent fist, not with the closed fist.
Right.
The things I love about fisting, number one, I'm just a size queen. I am just the kind of person, I'm attracted to all genders, all gender expressions, and I love me some cis male penis, but growing up with that kind of being my only sexual demographic to pull from until I was about 20, 21, it just couldn't get me off. It just wasn't getting me off. It wasn't enough girth. It wasn't, you know, I just didn't feel full enough, and I was upset at this and thought that this is going to be my life. And then, you know, as most queer stories turn out, I started dating my first girlfriend, and eventually, you know, she put a hand in me and I was like, oh, like the heavens opened up, and I needed to share this information with the world immediately. But I also equally, I'm a switch, and I equally, just as much as I enjoy receiving a fist, I love fisting other people. And as someone who is cis female identified, I wasn't born with a penis attached to my body. And so that's really the only opportunity that I have to put, like, an entire part of my own body into somebody else. And that is so mentally erotic for me. Like, that idea, and also so incredibly intimate, and something that I didn't even think I would ever be able to do, that it's just incredibly overwhelming in the best way possible, and I just love doing it.
Wow.
So, yeah.
And do you think that it's sort of come out of the margins and the shadows? I mean, I thought of it as a totally queer pursuit, and I feel like over the years that has changed.
I feel like it has changed, but I also feel like it's changed in a physically painful way, because cis male hands are much bigger and broader than most queer people that I know.
Right.
So I'm like, did it not catch on earlier because...
they just have massive hands.
Yes. Or did it not catch on earlier because they just have massive hands? I mean, I've only had one cis male hand be able to fit inside my body, and it was not for lack of trying, so... I mean, who knows? It's probably a nice little mixture of both, right?
Right.
Like, you look at, you know, your cis male husband's hands, and you're like, get those things away from me.
I want to talk about this new book coming out like a porn star. So, Jisley hates doing radio.
I know.
So, I don't think I'm going to have Jisley on the radio. I'm just telling you. I've told you this before, so my listeners know this. But I'm thinking of doing a thing where contributors to the anthology come on and read their pieces.
That would be wonderful.
Jizz will go for that, I think. So I do want to have that. And people can find out about this book at comingoutlikeapornstar.com. Tell me about your essay in the book.
Sure. So my essay in the book is called Outer Bust. And when Jizz first approached me to write an essay, the first thing I said to them was, well, I love writing and I love writing about myself, but I don't actually have a coming out story. And just like, oh, everybody has a coming out story. And I was like, no, I really don't. Like, I actually never came out to anyone. I just was a presence in the world, and people found out about my presence in the world, and then either decided to not pursue relationships with me, whether it was friendships, professional, or romantic, in non-dramatic ways, or they decided to pursue relationships with me in those ways. And I just rarely have to deal with it because of how out I am.
How old are you?
I'm 27. I know.
This is generational, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I did, however, not grow up in the Bay Area. I grew up in, like, a very, very small suburb in, like, farming country, South New Jersey. So I did grow up in a conservative, very whitewashed area, and pretty much the only reason I feel like I didn't come into my own queerness is because there were no demonstrations of queerness whatsoever until I got to college. So yeah, I feel like I was not the best woman for the job, and Jizz pushed me, and I'm glad they did, because I was very happy with my essay, and it's about how almost militantly out I am. And, you know, there's a lot of privilege in me being able to be out. You know, I am a white woman, I was raised in a middle-class background, and the sex work that I do is indoor sex work in, like, safe, structured environments, and I receive a certain level of notoriety for some of that sex work, mostly for the pornographic performance that I do.
Yeah.
A lot of privilege in being able to say that, and I know that a lot of that is directly responsible for the lack of dramatic consequences I have received as a result of being so out. But also because of that, the way I kind of wrap up my essay is by saying, because of the position I'm in, I feel like I should definitely always, when given an opportunity to have somebody who is more oppressed than I am speak up, I should always step back and let that happen. But in the absence of that happening, and when faced with silence from the community, because of my position as somebody who can be so out, that I have a responsibility to the community to step up and be out and be an activist around sex work. So that's kind of definitely where I'm at.
Okay. We're going to take another break, everyone. But when we come back, more with Andre Shakti.
No fluff. No lies. Just real women talking real sex.
I am so bruised on my girl bits.
Sex gets real.
Sex gets so real.
So real up in here.
A weekly podcast with Dawn.
I just masturbated.
And Dylan.
Let's talk about the elusive clit.
Check them out on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and at sexgetsreal.com.
Cock rings.
Cock rings.
Hey everyone, it's Tristan. Listen, there is nothing sexier than experience. Just ask the pleasure chest. As the oldest sex-positive boutique in America, this legendary establishment has made it their mission to provide sexual fulfillment to everyone, regardless of orientation, identity, or experience. With stores in New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago, as well as online, the Pleasure Chest wants to help you have the best sex of your life. Whether you're buying your first vibrator or your 10th leather flogger, you'll be assisted by a knowledgeable and friendly staff in an elegant, sex-positive environment. If you're looking to expand your sexual expertise, they offer free weekly workshops in locations nationwide where no subject is taboo or off-limits. Visit PleasureChest.com to learn more, because sex never goes out of style. You can use the coupon code Tristan at checkout and enjoy a free Pleasure Chest lube with every purchase.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. I am talking today with educator, producer, activist, and professional slut, Andre Shakti. And we are recording this episode in a hotel room at Sex Down South, which has been a phenomenal conference. And I encourage you to find out when the next one is. And hopefully it's going to be somewhere in the South. We're in Atlanta. I don't know if it's going to move or it's going to stay here, but go to sexdownsouth.com to find out more. Okay. So before the break, we were talking about your coming out essay. And then I also saw that you are working on an anthology of sex advice. Is it sex advice from sex workers?
So whenever I teach my classes, I've been teaching classes around sexuality for the past, I want to say, 5 years. And about 3 years in, somebody made a suggestion to me. And ever since then, whenever I teach a class, I leave index cards on the seats. And during the class, I tell people, you know, sex is a really charged topic, despite the fact that oftentimes in sex conferences we're surrounded by people who are identifying as progressive or liberal, talk about sex more readily. It's not always the case. So I have them fill out the index cards with any questions they may have, and at the end of class I will answer them anonymously. And that way a lot of people get their kind of the stuff that they have shame around and they're they're self-conscious about, they get them answered.
I mean, I do it in a lot of my classes, especially in college. It is just a really effective tool because, like you said, people have trouble speaking this out loud.
So I, for whatever reason, I always, if I never had a chance to address them all at the end of the class, I would then take them home and then post all of the answers to them on my website and then direct all the attendees to the website to see their questions answered. And I just kept them. And after a year and 2 years went by, I just had these huge stacks of index cards with people's like deepest, darkest sex questions on them. And 3L Media is a relatively recently developed publishing company. They put out Tina Horn's book earlier this year. They put out Coming Out Like a Porn Star. And they're very sexually progressive, and they're very committed to promoting and showcasing the voices of sex workers.
Yeah.
And so I approached them with the idea of having a kind of a coffee table type book of these like deepest, darkest sex questions, like America's deepest, darkest sex questions, answered by the professionals in that industry. Because if you have a medical question, why wouldn't you go ask a doctor?
Right.
And if you have a sex question, why wouldn't you go ask a sex professional?
I 100% agree with this. No, this is the thing that I feel so strongly about this because, you know, people ask me all the time, why don't you make your sex instruction videos with real people, right? I'm putting that in scare quotes. First of all, real people are really difficult to work with. as in, people haven't decided yet if they want to be a porn star. There's a lot of negotiation. So, but I also feel like porn stars are this entirely untapped resource of knowledge. Mm-hmm. you have to go into a situation and immediately negotiate your limits, your boundaries, get to know someone's body sexually right on the spot. Mm-hmm. Figure out your body and how it works so that you can get things going kind of quickly. Mm-hmm. Because that's the nature of the
work. All of this to make it look good for the cameras.
And make it look effortless.
Exactly.
Yes. So I feel like, yes, I feel like there is this wisdom. There's this tremendous wisdom that porn stars have and that other sex workers have because they are doing the work every single day.
Yeah. Yep. So, so right now I'm just in the process of like weeding through like those hundreds of index cards and, you know, pulling out a nice variety of them and then getting folks who really run the gamut of experience and years in the industry and, you know, different areas of the industry to step forward and answer them. And so many of them are, I mean, just as we were talking about, I consider all sex workers to be sex professionals and like industry professionals, but also many of them have gone on to higher education pursuits where they are now doing like sexual surrogacy or they're, you know, teaching classes or lecturing at universities and publishing books, you know, on sex. And so some of the most brilliant minds that I know, you know, in the sex industry who are teaching people and talking to people about sex in more quote unquote conventional settings started off as sex workers or still are sex workers. And so they're everywhere. We're everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. So I know another one of your passions is non-monogamy. And actually, we just literally ran here from my open relationship workshop, which I taught, and then we just dashed out of there because we're very busy and there's so much that I want to do and so much you want to do and so we have to cram it all in. First of all, I would love to hear your thoughts on my class and you don't have to kiss my ass. I just want to hear some feedback.
Oh my gosh. Well, you know, I just have no idea how they hired you to do this conference. I'm kidding. I'm totally kidding. I loved your class. I went with Johnny Blazes, my
traveling companion.
And both of us in our own ways have been practicing non-monogamy for years and are big fans of you, big fans of your book and your work. And we were hoping it wasn't going to be a 101 class. We didn't really know. The description was vague. And when we got in there, the first thing you said was, this is not going to be a 101 class. And we were like, yes. you know, I think there's this idea that the longer that you do something, the better you're supposed to be at it. And this presents itself a lot in my life because I've been practicing open non-monogamy for about 7 years now. And so folks often, you know, ask me my advice on their relationships. And in fact, there's a new website starting that's coming up next month called harlot.com. And it's aiming to be a more feminist, sex positive, sex work positive, kind of Jezebel type site.
Ooh.
And I'm doing a non-monogamy advice column for them, a weekly non-monogamy advice column.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I'm freaked out about it. I'm so freaked out because I still struggle with all of the same issues that folks who are just starting out in non-monogamy struggle with. And there's this assumption that because folks have been in it for a long time, that it's effortless for them and they've like worked past it. And like, what's that jealousy word anyway?
Right.
And we're doing just as much work on a consistent basis as people who are just starting out.
Yeah.
We may have finer honed our tools to work through those things, but we're still working through them.
Yeah.
So it is like a little nerve wracking for me. I'm excited, but it's a little nerve wracking.
Well, so one thing most people don't know about, my book opening up started out as like a 700 page manuscript, mm-hmm. right? You know, that I handed into Clia's Press really excited. And they were like, no. And this is even before sort of the death of print or, you know, people say that print is dead and it's all going to electronic. But they were like, we just can't produce a 600 page book. I mean, that it's too expensive. You know, it's like, it's the paper alone is too expensive. And I had an entire chapter, which got cut from the book, on sex worker non-monogamy. I know, you're sure.
Where is it? Where is
where
this chapter?
It
can I, like,
I mean,
dig it out of somewhere?
Yeah, no, it morphed. I mean, I didn't, like, eliminate it altogether, mm-hmm. so there are pieces of it then incorporated into it. But what I'm fascinated about, I mean, I do feel like I need to resurrect it, but what I'm fascinated about is how sex workers negotiate non-monogamy mm-hmm. because it is inherently different mm-hmm. than everyone else. But certainly in my life, I have met sex workers who consider themselves monogamous. Mm-hmm. All this other sex I'm having is work. I have sex with this one person at home and I'm monogamous. Mm-hmm. Whereas I've met other sex workers who are, you know, like there are people who became porn stars who came from the swinger community, mm-hmm. right? And so being non-monogamous was a lifestyle. Then they got into sort of some exhibitionism and then they turned to porn. And so it's like for them being non-monogamous and doing the sex work they do is all one big extension mm-hmm. of kind of their personal life and their professional life.
Absolutely.
Right? It's sort of mixed and overlapped. Mm-hmm. But I'm interested in the ways that you negotiate as a sex worker with your partner. Also, if you're with another sex worker or if you're with a so-called civilian, mm-hmm. how you negotiate non-monogamy differently than people who aren't doing sex work.
Absolutely. So my poly structure looks a lot like your definition of polyfidelity. So I date two individuals in a non-hierarchical way and in committed relationships, and then one of them also has an additional partner, and the four of us are all very, very close. And even though we don't all overlap in the same way sexually or romantically, we consider ourselves like a little family unit. I am the only sex worker in the group, and for all three of them, I was the first sex worker that they had all dated or been in that intimate of a configuration with. And so there was a lot of, not even so much negotiation, but just a sharing of information and an enlightening of information. And I have to say that I was a lot more conservative about it. I've never, fortunately, like knock on wood, I've never had a relationship where the person shamed me for doing sex work. My partners have always been really supportive, and I've been really fortunate in that aspect. But I still kind of hesitate sometimes to share things about my work with people because I'm fighting that societal, you know, assumption,
stigma
that my partner is going to react in a shaming and negative way, when in fact they've all always treated me with encouragement and support. So I actually taught another class here at Sex Down South called Love the Whore You're With that I put together originally with Tina Horn for the Feminist Porn Awards mm-hmm. last year. It is half about community building for sex workers, and the other half is specifically for allies around being a better partner or ally to sex workers. And what I tell people is that just like when you're negotiating non-monogamy, there are certain negotiations that you want to have with your partner who is a sex worker. For example, you want to know how much information is okay to share. So when I come home from a porn shoot, I want to know whether partner A is okay with me telling them that I had a great day at work and then dropping it. Are they okay with me telling them that I had a great day at work and, oh my gosh, my co-star was really hot and I had a fantastic time? And a lot of times the assumption is that the more sex somebody is having or the more sexual situations they're put in, that immediately it means they're at an increased risk for transmission of STDs, STIs. And I had to face a lot of those fears head on when I was talking to my partners about sex. And in reality, while more partners can potentially mean a greater risk of transmission, what matters more is how responsible those people are being about their own sexual health, how often they're getting tested, how honestly they're communicating with those people about what they're comfortable with and what their test results are, and also what activities they're doing. So, for example, I'm strictly a dominatrix, and I go to work every day, and I, you know, spank people and flog them, and then occasionally throw a strap-on harness over my underwear and fuck them in the butt. My risk of transmission in terms of STIs is very, very, very minuscule. However, a person who's not familiar with sex work may look at me and think, well, you work all the time in the sex industry, so what are you putting me at risk for? Mm-hmm. So sitting mm-hmm. down, being able to hear your sex worker partner when they tell you what they do, what activities they do, what risks they are making themselves, you know, available for, how they help circumvent those risks, and believing them are crucial when you're talking to somebody in a kind of romantic partnership.
Right, mm-hmm. right. But I still think the stigma is there, the shame is there, mm-hmm. and we are thought to think of sex workers as dirty, as risky, as having sort of dangerous bodies. Mm-hmm. Which you've got to break it down. I mean, it's like when people are like, oh my God, porn stars, you're only testing every 30 days, blah, blah. I'm like, right, but think about the people who are hooking up in bars and not testing at all.
Exactly.
And then the next day they go to a different bar and hook up with a different person.
Yeah.
That's way riskier than people who are constantly being tested and are constantly sort of negotiating with partners, this is what,
yes,
this is what I want to do, and this is how I want to do it, and how do you feel comfortable with that?
Absolutely. And that is what I tell my partners and folks who have questions about that, who are dating sex workers. I'm like, listen, again, it's like you have a rash and you're dating a nurse. You know, it's like literally I go to work every day and all I do is talk about sex, execute ethical boundaries, negotiate sex, educate people about sex, and in some cases have sex in controlled, structured environments. In California now, actually, we get tested every 14 days. So it's even more stringent than it was, you know, a year, year and a half ago. You could not be dating, in my opinion, my humble opinion, you cannot be dating a quote-unquote safer person in terms of sexual health than a sex worker, because that is literally our job, and we take it seriously on set, and we take it twice as seriously when it's in our personal lives and it's affecting people we love. Right. So that's what I just try and drill home to folks. Of course, there are irresponsible people everywhere out there. And in that same vein, there are going to be irresponsible sex workers. But we should not be held to the standards of a few individuals who may be less than ethical in our own community.
Right, right.
You've been listening to a special edition of Sex Out Loud, recorded live at Sex Down South with my guest, Andre Shakti. I want to once again thank the amazing sponsors that make this interview and this show possible, Lilo and Pleasure Chest. Coming up next, more with Andre in the Ask Tristan segment where we answer listener questions. Stay with us.
Pleasure and the freedom of sexual expression are universal human rights, and the better they're understood, the better they're enjoyed. For over a decade, Lilo has been designing pleasure objects that allow their owners to explore their bodies and better understand exactly what makes them feel good. Lilo knows that when you explore your sensations alone, the better equipped you are to start living a healthy, more vibrant, more satisfying life in every other respect. The right Lilo product, and there are many, for every purpose and solo sensation, can help you discover what feels right over and over again. Visit Lilo.com or any good adult store today to learn more, because sometimes the greatest gift you can get is the one you give yourself.
Hey everyone, it's Tristan. Listen, there is nothing sexier than experience. Just ask the Pleasure Chest. As the oldest sex-positive boutique in America, this legendary establishment has made it their mission to provide sexual fulfillment to everyone, regardless of orientation, identity, or experience. With stores in New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago, as well as online, the Pleasure Chest wants to help you have the best sex of your life. Whether you're buying your first vibrator or your 10th leather flogger, you'll be assisted by a knowledgeable and friendly staff in an elegant, sex-positive environment. If you're looking to expand your sexual expertise, they offer free weekly workshops in locations nationwide where no subject is taboo or off-limits. Visit PleasureChest.com to learn more, because sex never goes out of style. You can use the coupon code Tristan at checkout and enjoy a free Pleasure Chest lube with every purchase.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at PuckerUp.com. That's Tristan at PuckerUp.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. I've been talking with Andre Shakti in an interview recorded live at Sex Down South in Atlanta, Georgia. Now let's get back to the show.
So I have this segment called Ask Tristan, where I take listener questions, and I picked a few that sort of intersect with your things.
Okay.
So are you ready?
I'm totally ready.
Okay. This one comes from a guy who identifies as a guy and whose name in his email is Minty Dick.
Great.
So we're just
starting right off.
Okay. It's clever, Mindy Dick. It's clever. I'll give you that. Okay. Do you consider me unfaithful if I use escorts and I'm married?
Wow, that is really like a personal opinion question.
I'm asking you. What do you think?
So it sounds like that this gentleman, Minty Dick, is practicing, non-consensual, non-monogamy. However, as you mentioned in your open relationships class, I'm also inclined to give people the benefit of the doubt. And that does also apply to folks who are in non-consensual, non-monogamous situations. For example, we don't know what Minty Dick's marriage looks like. Maybe he's married to someone for whom sex is no longer possible, and they have children together. And it's a matter of keeping that family unit intact and preserving that family unit over a messy divorce and God knows what. And in order to keep his sanity and keep him, you know, being a supportive husband to his wife, he occasionally sees escorts. I would see that as less of an offense than if him and his wife were just having some marital discord issues, and rather than sitting down and talking them out with her or perhaps seeking professional assistance, he was going to escorts in order to run from the real problem. Mm-hmm. So there, I feel like, are lots of shades of gray in the circumstance.
And there was not a lot of details. You know, people exactly. send me like real long emails with details and then not at all.
Yes.
Okay, here's a detailed one. And it's long, so I'm going to go fast.
Okay.
It has taken considerable effort to write this all down. As a 38-year-old Caucasian, that's a Myers-Briggs INTP. Just Google that, folks, if you care to. And I just have a really hard time communicating my ideas sometimes, but I'm hoping to get some advice from you. He says he's read my book, and it actually made him sad. I am stuck in a monogamous relationship, but I want to see other people, and I'm having difficulty in explaining this need to my wife. We had a marriage ceremony, but we purposely never filed the paperwork. We both admit to being more like roommates than a couple and have been living together for 3 years. We've known each other for about 5 years before we even had the ceremony. And we live together, but I have feelings for other women, and I would like them in my life romantically. I caught my wife cheating on me last December, and since then, I took more of an interest in alternative relationship dynamics. She admits we have issues, and we have trouble connecting sometimes, which is why we're currently in couples therapy, but I feel like I'm in prison sexually. Okay, so I'm just going to skip a little bit of this. So when I found out that my wife was cheating on me, I sent a letter to her at the hotel that she was in London with her partner, and he actually sent me the letter, but we can't go into it, stating that, listen, if you're cheating with a lover right now at a hotel, then I think we have an open relationship. But now that time has passed and there's been no movement or discussion, I've tried talking to her about this, but it's like she's on a totally different plane, and I'm frustrated, and I'm thinking of walking away. I love her. I don't want to walk away, but I don't know what to do. Okay, so he just feels like sort of lost about what to do. Mm-hmm.
So I have actually been taking notes because my brain does not hold information, that much information. But in the beginning, I was kind of concerned because it seemed like he was trying to like delegitimize the marriage for us in order to like perhaps receive a certain response. Like, oh, well, your marriage doesn't sound like it's that legitimate, never filed the paperwork, more like roommates. So maybe like, you know, kind of trying to groom us to a certain answer. Mm-hmm. But then it took like a left field turn with her cheating. And I was like, okay, I didn't see that coming.
Right.
And then I really loved her response of like, when he tried to help hold her accountable for the indiscretion, she was like, well, I know that we have problems. I think she's conflating both of them wanting to see other people as a problem, you know? So they're looking at wanting to see other people as, this is a problem, this is not normal, this is not what normal people want to do. We have problems because
right.
we want to see other people.
Where it almost seems clear that, like, he's been thinking about this for a long time. She's explored sex outside the relationship.
It's perfect.
It just seems like you're both kind of on the same page, except if she doesn't want to engage.
She doesn't want to, she does not, she obviously has some kind of block around wanting to identify as the kind of person who has desires outside of one primary relationship. And so then, like, another left turn was, like, okay, she's off with this person now, okay, like, that kind of makes sense, and maybe she's trying to get rid of this guy, but then at the end, you were like, blah, blah, they're in couples therapy. I'm like, wait, now they're in therapy? She agreed to go to therapy?
Right.
So before, I literally wrote GTFO, like, get the fuck out, and then you said, now they're in therapy, and I'm like, oh, well, maybe she's acknowledging her issues in therapy, and they're working through them. So I would just say, if you're in therapy, man, you're on the right track if you're both in the same room with a professional willing to talk about these issues.
Well, first you have to have a professional who doesn't think non-monogamy
is a problem,
is dysfunctional.
Exactly, yes.
Because there are way too many therapists out there for whom, if you bring up this issue, they will tell you categorically, this is your problem. Mm-hmm. Once you resolve this problem and go back to being monogamous, you'll be fine. Mm-hmm. That's one person's opinion, and you need a different therapist then. Yeah. Then you need a therapist who is absolutely competent in open relationships, has experience working with people who are in them, and who has a neutral position on them.
Exactly. I mean, in my mind, it's no different than a woman showing up at a pharmacy counter and being denied birth control because the pharmacist does not believe that they should be given emergency contraception. It's somebody else telling you what to do with your own body and your own mind. And if that is what you're paying for, you need to stop paying that person.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you mentioned you have a website.
On openingup.net, yeah. I have this thing called the Open List.
Yes.
Which is, like,
which is wonderful. I'm so glad that's a resource for people to be able to find non-discriminatory, progressive, sex-positive therapists. Because really, until resource lists like that started popping up, it was all word of mouth. And
yeah,
folks would just cycle through therapists and sometimes get stuck with a bad one, where they would start to internalize that what they were doing and who they were is wrong and shameful, and they need to change it. When in reality, I mean, it sounds like this writer's relationship has been together for a while, and he really cares about this relationship, and he's like, he does want to make it work. And they're in therapy, so hopefully that feeling is mutual with his wife, and I would just encourage them to continue with therapy, hopefully, you know, at the hands of a non-monogamy positive professional.
I mean, I couldn't share the whole letter because it was just really, really long. But so there are some, like, unanswered questions that we have. But I do think that you both need to be on the same page. And for me, it seems like both of them are sort of invested in framing the relationship in a certain way. Like, he wants to frame it for us that, like, listen, we're more like roommates, but I really love her and don't want to leave her, but what do? I feel like I'm in a prison, right? He wants to frame it in one particular way. She wants to frame it in, I'm having casual sex with other people, but stop sending me letters saying that I'm having casual sex with other people because I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah. But who is that denial for? It's like, is that
denial, I know,
for them, as in, like, they need to deny that to themselves because they are, like, working through their own shit? Or is that, like, they're keeping up appearances for,
right,
other people? You know,
I feel like they think they should be having a certain kind of relationship. They're having a different relationship. Mm-hmm. They're really still invested in what the relationship should look,
yeah,
like, not what's right in front of them. Which is, right in front of them is, you're in London with your other lover. I'm, you know what I mean? This is, I'm interested in open relationships. Like, why don't we talk out loud about this? Radical acceptance. Yes, you just said radical acceptance. Yeah, so I feel like maybe there needs to be some stepping back and letting go of what you all think you should be doing and dealing with what you're actually doing, and if that works for both of you.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, that's all we've got time for. Wow.
Thank you,
Andre Shakti.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been wonderful.
Andre is a Bay Area educator, producer, activist, and professional slut. Find out more at Andre Shakti XXX. AndreShakti XXX.com. Follow her on Twitter at Andre Shakti. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible. Executive producer Karen Dana, associate producer Raymond Johnson, segment producer and editor Colton, announcer Cooper Beckett, from Life on the Swing Set, Matt, my engineer, and everyone at Voice America. Tune in next Friday, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, for another edition of the show. And until then, talk about sex out loud.
That's a wrap on today's show. Go to voiceamerica.com to listen to this and other episodes on demand or as podcasts. And make sure you come back next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, for Sex Out Loud with Tristan Taramino on Voice America Variety.